I'm going to be speaking on this morning is faith, and that really has been something that I've been learning to walk in for many, many years. And throughout the course of my life, I've had some opportunities to go sailing. How many of you have ever gone sailing? Sailing is such a wonderful, see if I can get this to work, wonderful experience in many, many ways. When I was 16 years old, it was the first time I went sailing, and I actually went with this guy that liked me a lot, and asked me to go sailing with him. And he had this little tiny boat about this size. This is called a sabot. They're 8 feet long. It was very small. We went to the harbor in Oxnard down in California. And after I did some study on these boats, it says they're vessels that were made for 1 to 2 sailing people in them while you're sailing. We had 4 people in the sailboat. And I don't think, like I said, this boy really liked me a lot, so he would probably do whatever I asked him to do, which is really scary. But anyway, so we went out in this boat, 4 of us, 16-year-olds, and we were sailing around the harbor, and that was kind of fun, but I was an adventurous sort when I was young, and so I always wanted high adventure, give me something really exciting. So I encouraged him, why don't we take it out in the ocean? Let's take it out in the ocean. I don't want to go in the harbor. This is, you know, it's kind of mild. And fool that he was, he listened to me, and we went out in the ocean in this little tiny sailboat with 4 people in it that was made for 1 to 2. And so we're out sailing out there in the ocean, and the boat actually, there's a thing called a sideboard, which is acts like a rudder for a very small sailboat. And without a rudder, you can't steer. Well, anyways, the sideboard of the boat broke. And so we were just kind of floating around out there, and the waves were getting very large. And so we were in this little boat, and the waves were up above us, coming up and down and up and down, until finally the waves were overtaking us, and the boat was filling up with water. And pretty soon we were sitting, and this was in like April, it was still cold for even California. We were sitting in water by that time, bailing with our tennis shoes, because we were fully clothed, trying to save ourselves, and the boat was sinking. And finally, and the poor guy, you know, it was his boat. Here I had talked him into going out into the ocean. The boat sinks, you know, and the 3 of us finally just jumped out because the boat was underwater, and he's still bailing, you know, trying to save his boat. And we had huge boats passing us, and we're waving for help, and they just waved back, you know, and kept going. And it's like, no, we're in trouble here. Finally, a huge sailboat came by and plucked us out of the water and saved us, and we got in a lot of trouble with the Coast Guard. That was my first experience in sailing, and it took me a long time to feel my feet after that because I got so cold. But anyways, my next experience, it wasn't this boat either, I just took these, you know, from the internet, was in a much larger sailboat. About this size. This is a 33-foot sailboat, and I had a friend that had a very large sailboat like this and used to take us out sailing on the ocean, but it was an ocean-worthy vessel, and so it was a lot of fun. And there was some times where we would go, and it'd be very just peaceful, gentle sailing, which we could just completely enjoy nature around us. Another time, though, I went with another friend on a boat like this, and we went out in the ocean, and he actually, he had his own business, and he took all of his employees out sailing once a year, and he invited me to go along. Me and his wife went along with all these young guys. I was older by this time. I was probably in my 40s. Went out with these young guys that worked for him, and they all thought they were really macho, and we were out sailing in the ocean, and a storm kind of came up, and it got very, very rocky. Now, I don't personally get seasick very easily, so I was okay, you know, but we were fighting the wind, and so it was really, I could tell the guy that was my friend who was steering the ship, he was pretty uptight, and so he was barking out orders, and it was really important for us to listen to those orders and do what he said, because I didn't know what I was doing out there. I was just a passenger along for the ride. All the young macho guys were heaving over the side of the boat. So that left me and his wife to listen and take his orders and do what we needed to do in order to survive that trip. And then last year, I went to Hawaii with my mom and my sister, and my sister and I, by a fluke, got a free pass to go on a sailing ship that was a racing sail ship. I mean, they were like World Cup racing boats. And this one had actually won sometime in the past. I don't remember. But anyways, so we get on this boat, and I'm thinking we're going out for a sail again. And it's a racing sailboat. I didn't even know what that was. But if you can see how the ship is tilted on its side, as soon as we started actually sailing out there, they told us, okay, put your feet down on this, and basically we were standing up. The boat was tilted sideways, and we were standing up. And we were flying through the water with the waves just crashing over us and soaking us. And it was exhilarating. It was so much fun to do that. That was probably the most exhilarating fun time that I had on a sailboat. And actually, this picture I took on that trip, which was amazing. We were right at the end of whale watching season, and God just blessed us. I mean, we had whales breaching around us. I had never seen anything like it. So I'm flying in the sailboat. I've got the waves splashing over me, and I'm taking pictures of these whales jumping out of the water, which was truly an incredible experience. Now, I look at sailing and some of these times and think this is very much like what it's like to live a life of faith and to live by faith. There's a few things in these experiences that I learned. The first one was to know your limits. When we were in that first sailboat, that sailboat had limits. That vessel had limits. And I pushed those limits, and we almost drowned. So that wasn't a wise thing to do. The second thing I learned, or one of the things that I've learned in those second couple of times, was to really listen to your captain. Listen to the person that is wise. Listen to the person that knows how to get you through the waters safely. And the third thing is to work with the wind. When we were on that racing sailboat, the wind was doing all the work. And we were just, the guy that was steering that ship was going with the wind. He was working with the wind. So our passage of scripture that we're going to look at regarding faith is actually in Hebrews 11 and 12. I'm going to start in Hebrews 12. We're going to skip around a little bit. But at the beginning of Hebrews 12, it says, "Therefore, since we are surrounded by such a great cloud of witnesses," and that great cloud of witnesses, God gave us a whole slew of people before us that walked by faith, that lived their life by faith. And they are all listed in Hebrews 11. So for the sake of brevity and time, I would like to go quickly through that list, because it's really important who we know, that we look at that great cloud of witnesses, who they were and what we have to learn from them. So at the very beginning of Hebrews chapter 11, it says, "Now faith is being sure of what we hope for and certain of what we do not see." So in verse 3, the first people listed as people that live by faith is we. I know it sounds a little strange. And when I read through this passage many, 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 many times, and it was so interesting to me that God starts with we. Who is we? I believe that we right there is humanity. Because it says we understand God in creation. And there's also a verse in Romans 1:20 that says that all of humanity have no excuse, because God has made himself known through his creation. We sang about that this morning. I love the songs that you chose that spoke of God in creation. Nature speaks of nature's God. So the people, the who, are we as humanity, and what we believe in is God as our creator. So there's somebody greater than us that brought all this into being. The next person that is listed is Abel. Now, if you're familiar with Abel in the Bible, he was one of the first brothers. Cain and Abel were the first brothers of Adam and Eve, and it says Abel gave a good offering to God. So Abel is who we're looking at. And what did Abel believe? Abel believed that God was to be loved and honored. And so when Abel gave his offering to God, he gave the best that he had. He was a rancher, and so he gave the choice cuts of meat to God when he went to offer. And God really, it wasn't the meat, it was the heart that God saw, that his heart was completely for him. Whereas his brother, he gave an offering, but it was kind of an afterthought. The thing that really stood out to me about Abel as well is that Abel did what was right. He gave the best. He gave the best of himself and out of his heart. And what happened to Abel? He was murdered. He was killed by his brother, who was jealous and angry. And so even giving your best, you know, it was kind of what Bruce was preaching last week even, is that we tend to think, oh, if we do this, this will happen, you know. And that's not always true. Abel was killed because of his jealous brother. The next person listed is Enoch. I did some reading on Enoch. There isn't a lot to read about Enoch out there, unless you want to read. There's actually a book of Enoch that didn't make it into the Bible. I didn't have time to read that. But Enoch, it says Enoch lived for 365 years, and it says he pleased God. In Hebrews 11, it said Enoch pleased God. So Enoch believed that God existed and lived a righteous life before God. He believed. You know, and there isn't a whole lot of exciting things that we can say about Enoch as far as what do we know. The most exciting thing, the thing that usually stands out and that I have heard, and I read about that too, is that God rewarded Enoch in that he didn't have to pass through death like all of us are going to do probably someday. I don't know. Maybe God will take us up, but it's only happened a few times. So Enoch was rewarded for walking faithfully for 300 years with God. He believed. The next person we see is Noah. We all know about Noah. Noah obeyed God. God asked Noah to do something extraordinary. God asked Noah, build me a boat. We're back at boats again. Build me a boat. But it wasn't just any boat. It was a gigantic boat. And not only did he say, build me a boat because I'm going to destroy the earth with a flood. What's a flood? Noah had never seen rain. What was that to Noah? So he had to live by faith that God was telling him the truth and just obey. Okay, I'll build the boat, I'll put my family on it, and I'll believe you, God. And so Noah believed that he was going to see something that had never happened before. The next person listed is Abraham. Abraham, again, obeyed God. And he went first. Abraham is listed a few times in this chapter. The first thing that he did is he left everything that was familiar to him. He left where he was living because God told him to, said, go and live in this foreign land and with people that you don't know. And interesting in that verse, too, it also says that so Abraham went and he didn't even know where he was going. In some ways, I feel a little bit like I can relate when I moved to Washington. It's kind of, okay, we'll go, but I don't know where we're going or why necessarily, and yet here I am. The next person, verse 11, Sarah is mentioned as receiving strength. Sarah received strength to conceive and bear a child at the age of 90. Well, now, I don't know about you women. Any of you that have had a child, they say that it takes the energy of an entire football team playing an entire football game, that much energy to have a baby. I believe it because I've had a few. And it's a very laborious task. Even when I had my first two children in my 20s, and then I had my last one in my 30s, and I was surprised at the difference between my 20s and my 30s. It's like, well, this is getting harder. And so I can't even imagine being 90. I mean, I always think of my great-grandmother, you know? It's like, really? It just takes a lot of energy. But she believed that God would keep his promise. He had promised her a son. He had promised her that through her God was going to fill the earth with many people. So she believed that God would keep his promise, and she believed that God would give her the strength to endure labor. In verse 17, we go back to Abraham. It says Abraham offered Isaac on the altar. Abraham, again, God had promised this son, had promised Isaac, basically, through Sarah, that through her offspring, many nations were going to fill the earth. They were going to populate the earth, as many as stars there are in the universe. So along comes Isaac, and God kept his promise. And then God says, okay, now, Abraham, I want you to take Isaac. I want you to go up this mountain, and I want you to sacrifice your son to me. And it says that Abraham reasoned in his mind, well, okay, I got, you know, and he said, he reasoned in his mind that God could raise him from the dead. Now, that's a lot of faith. I mean, you know, I think if I would have been Abraham, I don't know. I think I would have thought, what? Are you crazy? I mean, this isn't going to work like this. I don't get it. How could you give this to me and then take it away? But Abraham went, and he believed that God somehow would work it out. Maybe he would raise Isaac from the dead. And in a sense, he didn't have to kill Isaac. God provided another lamb for slaughter, and Isaac was spared. In verse 20, it says, we move on to Isaac. It says, Isaac lived by faith. And what it talks about, what Isaac did, is it says, Isaac blessed his children's future. He believed that his blessing was from God, and it was his to give through God. And this is true. I think this is still true today in many ways. I think that as parents, we are given the awesome responsibility to bless our children, to pour into their lives a blessing, and to call that out of them in a sense. But in the Jewish tradition, it was what the father handed down to his ancestors, his children, and then in the next. So he believed that his blessing was from God. He believed he had that power to give that. God had given it to him. And the next one is his son, Jacob. It says, when Jacob was dying, he blessed his grandchildren. He actually looked at his children, and he saw Joseph's sons, and he saw, God gave him eyes to see who they were going to be and the tribes that were going to come through them. And it said that he blessed his grandchildren. So, again, he believed that God would do that through his blessing. And he actually transposed his blessing. Typically, when they gave a blessing to their children or the grandchildren, it was oldest to the youngest. But God had given him eyes to see that actually the younger was going to be greater than the older. And so and they did it with the right and the left hand. So he transposed his blessing and put his right hand on the younger and his left hand on the older, which I just thought was interesting. Then we move down to Joseph, Jacob's son. Joseph, in verse 22, it says, Joseph gave them a history lesson. By faith, these are all people that says they did these things by faith. So Joseph saw, he looked back. I remember a few weeks ago, Arden talked about how much God tells us to remember, to look back, to see what God has done. And that's what Joseph did. He looked back to the Exodus, and he gave these people a history lesson. He gave it to them and said, remember what God has done. Remember where he's brought you from. And so he believed that remembering where they came from was vital to where they were going. And then it says he also instructed them to take his bones into the promised land. He wanted his bones to be where his heart was. And his heart was where God was, and he saw the promised land. He didn't get there, but so he told them to take his bones there. In verse 23, the who is Moses' parents. I love it. They made it into this list of people that live by faith. Moses' parents acted in civil disobedience. There was an edict put out by the Pharaoh that said to slay all of the Hebrew male children that were born. And it says Moses' parents could see, again, they saw something special in Moses. And so they disobeyed. Instead of killing Moses, they hid him away. And they saved him, and they put him in the basket. You guys, if you know the story, he went down the Nile, and he was spared, and he was saved. And actually, he was raised up through them even giving him away to greatness. So they believed, and they saw something special in Moses. In verse 24, it says, Moses gave up his status and power. He left Egypt, and he kept the Passover. He believed that God had a higher purpose for his life, that the temporary pleasures rather than the temporary pleasures of Egypt. He was given wealth and status and everything through being raised up as the son of Pharaoh's daughter. And he gave it all up. He walked away because he believed God had something more for him, a higher purpose. In verse 29, the who is the people. I love it. It says, the people passed through the Red Sea. So even when God, when he correlated this list of people that live by faith, he put us as a community, the people, together. These people passed through the Red Sea. They believed that God would take them safely to the other side. And they did this as a people, as a group. And that's what I love about the church, is that we are that group of people that God calls us to rise up and to live by faith and to move, sometimes through things that are extraordinary. Again, in verse 30, it says, the people marched around the city of Jericho for 7 days, and they believed that God would give them victory. I mean, that's kind of an incredible story. I spent a lot of time this week even looking at the story of how Jericho fell, and it's really, truly incredible that these people would march around a city. You know, God says, I mean, God told them to do some interesting things. It's like, okay, I want you to go to this city, and I want you for 6 days to march around the city one time, and that's all. And then on the seventh day, I want you to march around the city 7 times, and not until Joshua told them, after that seventh time, we're going to blow our horns, we're going to shout, and the walls are going to fall, and you can take the city. Now, I love it that God used the collective people again to do this. In verse 31, Rahab, who was a prostitute in the city of Jericho, welcomed the spies that came to spy out the land that God was going to give them. It says that they came, and she hid them because otherwise they would have been killed. And she believed that God was with these men. It says that she believed that they were there. So she said, I'll hide you. I'll watch out for you. And it says, because of her faith to believe that God was working here and moving in these people. When you read it, it says the people were melting with fear. Melting with fear. They knew these people were coming. So Rahab chose sides, and she said, I believe this is God. I'm going with you. And it says that her life and all of her family was spared from that city. The rest of the city was destroyed. And then in verse 32, it says, Gideon, Barak, Samson, Japheth, David, Samuel, and the prophets conquered kingdoms and administered justice. And they believed that God was strong in their weakness. I want to read you a list of some of the things it says that they endured. It said they were tortured, some feared jeers and flogging. They were chained and put in prison. They were stoned. They were sawed in two. They were put to death by the sword. They were destitute. They were persecuted and mistreated. And it says the world was not worthy of them. They wandered in deserts and mountains and in caves and holes in the ground. Those are our witnesses. That is Hebrews 11. These are the witnesses that have been recorded, and there's many, many more of people that have lived by faith throughout the centuries. And so now we go back to Hebrews 12, and it says, let us throw off everything that hinders and the sin that so easily entangles, and let us run with perseverance the race marked out for us. Now, I love that they use the metaphor of the race that's marked out for us. Each one of us has a race to run, and we're running it right now, because your life from beginning to end is that race of faith. It is that journey that you're going through every step of the way, in every circumstance of your life. You're called to live by faith. And each race is different. I think about those three, I showed you my sailing ships, because each one of those ships, or sailboats, or little boats, they were different types of vessels. And I think that is a good description of what we are. We're all different types of vessels. My journey is not even going to be like Bruce's journey. It's going to be different because I'm a unique individual created by God. He has me to walk my own path. And so even the closest person to you, they're still not going to walk your path. It's yours alone. And all of these people, when we look back at all of these people that are listed for us in Hebrews 11, they were all very different types of people that God called individually to run the race with perseverance, to give it all they had. The interesting thing that I found, too, there was a couple of verses. In verse 13, it says that all these people were still living by faith when they died. They did not receive the things promised. They only saw them and welcomed them from a distance. It says that a couple of times in there. They didn't receive what had been promised. But they were commended for their faith. And faith, again, remember, faith is believing without seeing, being certain without seeing. And all of these people believed. They had faith that God was bigger than what they could even see. What was fascinating as well is all of this happened in the Old Testament. This was all before Jesus was born, all of the people listed. They all believed in the coming Messiah. That was what they didn't see. They didn't see Jesus in the flesh. And the reality of it is neither have we. We have not seen Jesus in the flesh, and God calls us to believe in the same way, to believe without seeing, and to run the race to the end of our lives for whatever God has for us. It actually, in verse 26 of chapter 11, it says that Moses, he regarded disgrace for the sake of Christ, which I think, for the sake of Christ. See, he saw what was coming. They all believed in Jesus. They just didn't see him in the flesh, but they all saw ahead. And Israel always believed that there was a coming Messiah. There was a redeemer for the people. So they believed without seeing, and it says, in verse 27, it says, he saw him who is invisible. And that is exactly what we are called to do as well. In Hebrews 12:2, it says, let us fix our eyes on Jesus. Well, we have to fix our eyes on Jesus, whom we can't see with our eyes, but we know in our heart that he is real and that he exists. Fix our eyes on Jesus, the author and perfecter of our faith. So any faith that we have comes from Jesus. Jesus is the one that empowers us to live by faith. It comes from him. Jesus, who the joy set before him, endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God. Consider him who endured such opposition from sinful men, so that you will not grow weary and lose heart. So Jesus, through his death on the cross, through his life journey, really, if you're going to look at it, he walked on the earth, and he lived a life, and his life ended in a very gruesome death. And so he endured hardship. And then, if you skip down to verse 7, it tells, the author tells us, endure hardship as discipline. No discipline seems pleasant at the time, but painful. And I think that... at least for me, this has been, when I am under hardship and when things aren't going right, I really want to figure out how to make them go right, because I'm tired of that. I don't want to stay in that place. And yet, I really believe that what this is saying is that this is how God grows our faith. This is how God strengthens us and grows us up as believers in Jesus, is to go through hard things. Because it says later on, however, it produces a harvest of righteousness and peace for those who have been trained by it. So when God disciplines us, Well, I put, how does God discipline us? By not giving us what we want. You know, you think about when you discipline your children, you usually are taking something away from them that they want, and they get very angry. They don't usually like it. And I think we're not much different than little kids. You know, God looks at us and he thinks, okay, I know you don't get it, but you're just going to have to trust me on this, that I know what's good for you. And so God allows trials and he allows hardships in our lives to discipline us, to grow us up, to make us stronger. This can come in a myriad of ways. I listed a few: relationships, finances, our health. These are ways that God grows us up. And whenever those things aren't doing well, we usually just think, oh, God, please change this. You know, have mercy. I pray, have mercy a lot. And I think God hears that. He knows us, and yet he knows us better than we know ourselves. And he knows you're going to be okay. You're going to get through this, and in the end, you're going to actually be stronger. And so I have to surrender. I love that there was a surrender in there, and I think it's a constant. It's a constant. Walking by faith is constantly surrendering your life again and again and again and again. So my question to you today, and I know I went a little long, is where are you at in your journey of faith right now? I love this list because it tells us many different ways that God wants us to live by faith. And so I made a list of questions. We're going to take just a few minutes. Is God asking you to see something by faith? There were people in this list that God wanted them to see something, and he wanted them to live by faith by what he showed them. Or does God want you to do something? I will be surprised if God asked you to build a boat, you know, maybe a small one, but probably not an ark. But God may ask you to move. God may ask you to require of you an act of civil disobedience. There's many different things. God may ask us as a community to do something together. What are we going to band together and do? Or God may want you to receive something. Sarah received strength to give birth. Enoch received freedom from death. And the people received protection when they walked through the Red Sea. Or is God wanting to grow your faith, or for you to live by faith, by you giving something? It says Abel offered a good offering to God. Jacob gave by giving his blessing to his children. And Joshua, he gave by giving a history lesson. So I would just like to take a couple of minutes of silence and just contemplate this and allow God to speak to your heart. And then we'll close.